Good morning. Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams. New Mexico ranks near the bottom of the country for things like childhood hunger and access to healthy food, but some of the country's oldest and most robust farming systems are still at work here, growing crops for low-income families, schools, and farmers markets. What role does community farming play in addressing hunger, food security, and environmental health? What does the future look like for urban and community farmers and locally sourced food? We want to hear from you, so give us a call. 277-5866 is the number to join the conversation. Joining us in the studio to talk about community farming is Travis McKenzie, who works at he farms at Cornelio Candelario Organics, in the South Valley. Travis wears quite a few hats. Currently, he's with Sembrando Semillas, Growing Health. And Growing Health and Justice and Project Feed the Hood. Quite a mouthful, Travis.
Thank you, Ed.
Pam Roy is with us on the phone from Santa Fe. She's with the New Mexico Food and Agriculture Policy Council. Hi, Pam.
Good morning. Thanks, Ed.
And we also have Magdalena Avila from the Mountain View Community Garden. We're glad to have you with us as well, Magdalena.
Gracias.
Travis, before we get started talking about farming, let's talk a little bit about this issue of food justice. What does that mean to you, food justice?
Yeah, buenos dias. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Ed, for having us. It's an honor to be here. We love KUNM, and shout out to all the people and family around the state and around the world. Food justice is such an important issue, I feel, in our time, and it's so great to finally see it get some traction and start to become aware of our people, you know, and in our consciousness that food justice is a very real issue. Food justice is a way that we can remember that we all have an agrarian heritage, that we're all connected to the sacred Mother Earth, and that we really feel that everyone, it's a human right to have access to healthy, organic food. And for thousands of years, people have been stewarding the land and water and growing food for themselves and their families and their community. Nowadays, we have things called food deserts, where there's neighborhoods that don't have access to healthy food. They only have access to convenient store food, junk food, fast food restaurants, liquor stores, things like that. So our food landscape's greatly changed. Our generation was born into the time of Big Gulps and Number Ones and Supersize This, and there really is less people growing food for their families nowadays, but we have a lot of people out there still doing it, still maintaining the culture and traditions around land and water and food. And then also there's a big corporate attack on our people, and we see this through cheap junk food. It's in our schools, it's in our supermarkets, it's on commercials, and food justice is a way to stand up against that and really try to create an equitable food system and kind of take a stand against our more capitalistic food system that doesn't really seem to have the health of our people in mind. Profit seems to come before planet and people. And so food justice is really just a way we can all bring all these issues together. There's migrant farm workers and the reality that they face each and every day growing most of the food for our country. You know, just tons of issues, school lunches and the health of our school lunches, community gardens, community farms, all that kind of lumps into food justice. And it's a way to look at social justice and tie in and to connect to the other issues like environmental justice and immigrant rights and all these things. So food justice really, I feel, has taken its rightful place in the social justice world and become a main part of the work that we do for social justice.
So you say that, you know, access to healthy food, even maybe locally grown food, is a human right. But like you mentioned, not everyone has that access. And I think, ironically, some of the places where a lot of these community farms are working are food deserts themselves. Magdalena, what about the community of Mountain View, where you are opening this new community garden?
Actually, we started it, a small group of about 8 to 10 of us, in about March of 2015. And it started actually back in the fall. And people just started to get together, members of Mountain View, and saying, we need a garden here, we need interaction, we need engagement, we need to provide a place that empowers, that heals. Everything that was said is absolutely right on in terms of the social justice lens that gardening can provide and really taking people back to, I think, their place. If you want a starting point in terms of a conversation and engagement with community, it's let's plant, let's do a garden. And so we started that in Mountain View. It's been a beautiful process because I think it has brought people together. We have, it was a small grant that was provided by Bernalillo County that started us off. But I think there was more in-kind donations than anything from tractors to, you know, doing the rows to the tillers. Everybody would show up and do the work. And what we wanted to do was to create a place to say, hey, here's a chance that you can come and just plant. It's right off of 2nd Street. And the other thing is that we're starting that again. It's free. It's of cost to no one. Just come. And we wanted to use it and plan to still use it in how we're working it as an educational pipeline. There's no question that when you look at Mountain View and look at the onslaught of industry, when you look at the onslaught of between, for example, many communities in the South Valley and other communities such as Northeast Heights, there's about a 22-year differential in quality of life in terms of, you know, living and dying. And we said, we have to change this. And I think it's really important for Mountain View and the garden that has been started. It is a gym, and it's green space. It's green infrastructure. That's what's therapeutic for our communities rather than lot after lot of industry, all of the, you know, where the cars and you have all these wrecking yards and you think of all the pollution that they create. And so the Mountain View Garden started with, as I mentioned, the Mountain View residents, has been very powerful. And right now we're putting out the word because we're trying to get people to come in and get a row and plant a row, or you can get a planter box, and we've tied into Mountain View Elementary. But again, it's totally a place of empowerment, a place of education, a place of legacy, because indigenous people and just people who have always worked the land, that's been taken away. And that is a true source of healing. Mm. You don't have time to go to the doctor. You don't have money to go to the doctor. Work with land. And you get a healing that comes from what I call, you know, a lot of generational legacy and conciencia genética. It's a real sense of consciousness that's there. Everyone can relate to the land, everyone, especially with children.
Well, Pam Roy, we're hearing a lot about food deserts, kind of the intergenerational healing that farming can have, that farming can have in a community that's been disenfranchised. Would you say this is a statewide issue? You work statewide in terms of policy. I mean, are these isolated things about food deserts and health that we're talking about in the South Valley of Albuquerque? Or is this kind of a universal trend across New Mexico?
Ed, yeah, great question. Actually, really, it is statewide. And New Mexico, you know, because of the vastness and the diversity of our state, and that diversity is geographic as well as it is people. We're a very rural state still compared to a lot of other places. So Travis brought up the idea of food deserts, and I have to say it's a term that I don't like, because we have food. We find lots of food in the deserts, and we actually are in deserts here in the Southwest.
Yeah.
And so, but we have areas in New Mexico where as much as almost 50% of our community members are still below poverty. And if we don't address poverty first, and because that then is kind of the base of everything else when it comes to food insecurity, lack of access to food, we have about 10% of our adult population that do not have cars or don't have transportation of their own. And that means, for instance, out on the Navajo Nation, some people actually travel 140 miles round trip, so 70 miles one way, to get to, like, a major grocery store. And many times, that major grocery store may be a Walmart. And so, like Clavis is saying, there's so many other ways that we need to really make sure that people can access healthy, affordable, and many times culturally significant foods, the things that are a part of our ancestral diets and the things that we care about spiritually, and also that are really healthy to our bodies. And so there's so much we need to think about. You mentioned, for instance, school food. So when we think about the idea of policy, that word, so school food is has standards, and those are set by the federal government. And many of us at this table that we're at now and others have worked really hard to in that very, very, very big system to create more options for young people, more fresh fruits and vegetables. So in the last few years, schools have been required to get twice as many fruits and vegetables on the plates in a lunch meal program. Now, that may not still translate to something that we at this table really would like to see necessarily on that plate. So what folks like Favis and others have been doing is getting more local food into the cafeterias and building the relationships between our farming community and those who are serving food, no matter where it is. And those relationships then translate to eventually getting those options become more and more beautiful and more enjoyable. And we do have some schools that are serving really beautiful, beautiful farming food, and the kids are loving it. And so it's just taking building those relationships and breaking down those policies. And we do have a policy, both at the state and federal level, that schools are supposed to minimize junk food and vending machines in the schools. And so as community members and parents, we need to put a little more pressure on the public education department to adhere to those rules and make sure that schools are not actually doing the things they're not supposed to do, so that we really have the healthiest environment we possibly can for kids.
Well, let's go to the phone. We have Saira Namaste with us, joining us from Rio Riba County. She's with the American Friends Service Committee. And Saira, Rio Riba County is where you're working, is one of the most food insecure places in the state. I mean, why is that? Do you see community farming changing that problem?
Definitely. It's interesting that, thanks for having me on the show, Ed. Here in Riba County, we historically have had a wonderful, vibrant food system, and we have fed a lot of the state of New Mexico, especially in northern New Mexico, and we traditionally have our acequia system, which is still intact and one of the last places on earth where people democratically control water. And we do have some wonderful farms, and AFSC has created a farmer cooperative in Rio Riba called La Cosecha del Norte, a growing co-op. And it is sad to see a lot of our food leaving New Mexico and our food not getting to our own community. So one of the things that we do is really try to link the farmers that we train to our school systems. I know Pam was talking earlier about schools, and we've been getting our food to five different school districts grown right here in Rio Riba. And getting our food into the farmers markets and to some of the grocery stores. And so we really would like to take back the history of our food system in Rio Riba and in northern New Mexico and make it vibrant again and build that back up.
Go ahead, Magdalena.
Let's see, there's a concept here that for me is essential. It's the underlying theme. When we looking at food, we've worked so long as people of color throughout the United States, as people of color in the history of Nuevo Mexico, Chicano, Native communities. And the point I want to make is we've talked and we work so much at decolonizing our mind. What we're looking at is decolonizing our diet, because the rates of diabetes are beyond control. And the way that we can do it is to look back at the food that worked for us versus the food that kills us.
Mm-hmm. Well, we want to hear from you. Do you shop at a farmer's market? Do you work on a community farm or garden? Do you live somewhere where this kind of healthy food is hard to get? We want to hear your stories, and the phone lines are open. So call us now. Join the conversation. Our local number is 277-5866, toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also send us an email at callinshow@kunm.org or post comments to our webpage. That's kunm.org. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Corley's Albuquerque Lincoln Volvo, providing new and used car sales as well as repair and maintenance for Volvo, Ford, and Lincoln, with same-day service often available. Located off I-25 on Pan American Freeway in Albuquerque. Info at CorleyNewMexico.com.
On the next New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas, in October 2014, Albuquerque signed a consent decree with the Department of Justice to reform the APD, which had unjustifiably shot and killed nearly 30 residents in just the previous 4 years. To date, however, little has been accomplished, and the court monitor is, quote, anything but pleased. Join host Stephen Spitz for a discussion of this critical issue with former Deputy DA Pete Tinelli, Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
This is KUNM 89.9, broadcasting from the University of New Mexico. We're back talking about community farms, hunger, and health. Does our government give small farmers the support they need? What would improve access to healthy foods for New Mexicans? Does New Mexico's farming tradition have a role to play in filling the food gap? If you want to weigh in or ask a question of our panel, the number is 277-5866, locally in Albuquerque. Toll-free number, 877-899-5866. Magdalena, before we left off, you were mentioning a little bit about decolonization and decolonizing the food supply. So what I'm hearing is there's a racial aspect here. I mean, what role does race play in this food inequality, in your opinion?
You can go back and look at the whole history of New Mexico and the Norte and the South, and that's when it was a big shift that happened that went from agrarian and the power of growing our communities. When World War II happened, that communities saw the fathers and brothers go off to war, and we went into wage-based. So the communities that used to rely on agrarian and growing their own, all of a sudden it went to an economy-based and wage-based. So they went to go and get jobs. The small farms started to just sort of disappear little by little. But you still find that people have that history in their mind. They remember their grandmother, their grandfather. They remember how they used to plant the food. So that is essential. You can't talk about food and not talk about the history of New Mexico, the master farmers, sort of the loss that's we're facing, I think, with the changes in generation. And it's been absolutely fantastic to see the motivation, the inspiration, and the leadership coming forth from this new, younger generation. The Mountain View Community Garden itself, we had Angel, a young man who helped us. He had all his expertise. He came and helped us. This is what you do. This is how you do it. This is the best way to approach it. So it was awesome dialogue. And it wasn't just older adults leading the movement, but the younger generation who needs to take over that stewardship to keep the quality of our life and also the quality of our health. We have the answer to our own health, and it comes through our food and how we grow it. But that power has been taken away from us by the corporations, by processed foods, by just changing the fact that we don't even remember our cultural history in many places, which was rich about food and growing.
I want to add, in terms of institutional racism, we definitely see it in northern New Mexico and throughout the state. And you know, the USDA was sued for racial discrimination against farmers of color here in New Mexico, indigenous farmers, Chicano, Hispanic farmers. And in our farmer training program, we have young people that tell us every year. In our each year, we have a year-long class, hands-on learning, and yes. We have young people come in that say, "My uncle told me not to join a farmer training program. My grandpa told me not to. We lost our family farm. We had stuff taken from us. There is a long history of resources and land-based people's way of life, which are people of color being oppressed and having their things taken away, having their land and their way of life taken away. So there's fear in like coming back to it because of that history of racism, because of the history of discrimination as our country moved to a bigger agribusiness model. And it's based on farm worker exploitation, which again is people of color who are the farm workers. And they are being heavily exploited and not paid fairly, which brings down the price of food. And then farmers can't compete with that price if they're going to pay their workers fairly. So there's a whole system and layers of racism. But we see it all the time in northern New Mexico when people talk about the history of their family and why they don't farm anymore, or why the farmland was taken away, or why their water rights were taken away. And you can't farm without water.
I'm just going to jump in real quick. There's so much to say. Thank you guys so much for sharing all this. And the food desert thing, thank you, Pam, because we've also evolved that to maybe calling it food apartheid or food oppression, where it is a strategy against low-income people of color. Just a shout-out, the New Mexico Acequia Association and all our acequeros, acequeras that still tend the land for their families, grow food and ranch and raise animals. And I'm fortunate enough to farm at Cornelio Candelaria Organics with Lorenzo Candelaria and Dora Pasillas. The land has been in Lorenzo's family for over 9 generations, so it's a 300-year-old family farm. And that intergenerational mentorship is so important to link young people like me or Angel with our elders to work together to really raise consciousness and raise awareness about stewardship of the earth and water. And Lorenzo always tells us the most important crop we grow is consciousness. And the conciencia genética is just so right on. And I think intergenerational mentorship and work is going to lead the way here in the future, and hopefully we can find some more support and resources to support that kind of activity and work in our communities.
Let's go to the phones. We have Ray Garduño on the line from Albuquerque with a comment about school community gardens. Hello, counselor.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear us, Ray?
Hi there. How are you? Ray Garduño. And I wanted to make sure that people remembered and a shout-out, first of all, to Travis and Joaquin and the many other people that have worked so hard on community gardens. And especially the Southwest Organizing Project, which has been essential, instrumental in making this happen. I wanted to remember and remind people that, you know, we have a community garden policy, and I know people have been talking about policy as if it's something that we should work on in the future only. In the past, we have very good groundwork that's been done, but it certainly needs some more support, and I'm glad to hear that people are talking about that, not only in the school-based, but also community-based.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ray. We appreciate all the work you've done, and Ray and Ilsa have been such an instrumental part of Project Feed the Hood and getting our first community garden space in partnership with the city and the aviation department. And we named our first community garden the Ilsa and Ray Garduño Community Garden to honor their legacy of food justice and working to bring health and happiness to the community. So,
you know,
thank you.
Mr. Garduño mentioned schools, and you know, school gardens, I know, are a big issue as well. And there has been like a push even on the federal level. Michelle Obama put a garden, community garden on the White House lawn and has been working with school kids. What role do school gardens play in what we've been talking about in terms of food justice, in your opinion?
Mountain View, they have a small little garden that was started by one of the members who is now also a lead member of the Mountain View community. They're essential because what happens is gardens within the school are a curriculum. And it's a curriculum that's an inherent curriculum. It's so natural to the children, and it comes from their own community. It's a curriculum that doesn't have to be written. You can eat it. You can taste it. You can touch it. You can integrate it into your whole body. And that works beautifully with our children, who are sometimes on the run doing all these things to go and take the time to plant and see what they have grown. It's a very empowering curriculum. I think throughout the nation that you see that it has really taken root. It has come back. I also know that there's a group in terms of doing the education, and in Hemis, there's a group of youth very involved in bringing the food back to their own schools rather than relying on it being brought in from someplace else. So it's at sense of sustainability. So teaching children from the very beginning by planting that first seed in their little school community garden, this is what real food is, and this is what food is about. And it just really does empower. But keep in mind that community gardens started at the school's live curriculum, and children learn that, and they eat it, and they get healthy, and they say, hey, why should I have that food over there when I can have this one? It's powerful to see children.
And it's funny because, I think a lot of moms and dads will identify with the yuck factor that they get from kids when they're trying to get them to eat their broccoli. But it sounds like you're saying if they're actually growing that broccoli, maybe they'll be more likely to eat it.
Yes. Definitely. And we've seen that time and time again. If the youth are involved in growing the food, they get so excited. They have a reverence for it. They know the hard work that went into it. And really, when we grow food and eat it either at the farm or in school gardens, I've never heard the yuck factor. They're always excited. They're always into trying new things. And maybe they don't like it. Maybe arugula is too strong for them or this and that. But they have that curiosity. They want to try it. And let's tell it like it is. We have over 80 school gardens in Albuquerque Public Schools right now.
Over 80.
But we only have one that I know of, one part-time garden educator in our Albuquerque Public. So we have all these gardens. But when we're talking about policy initiatives, we don't have any positions that are supporting these school gardens. And really, Food Corps, shout out to Food Corps, it's a national organization, they are placing people at schools to work at the school garden. Like I think of Al Nayer Lara at Kirtland Elementary, who's a Chicano, gets to work 40 hours a week there at the school, working with the kids in the garden, taking classes out, working with curriculum and the teachers. And that's just an amazing model for what we need for the district. We need garden educators. We need the district to support this. And also, one of the Food Corps members, Fallon Bader, she's doing a project right now. She's trying to get a one-page summary of each school garden. so we can create kind of like a digital database of gardens and really an opportunity for schools to tell their story, to share pictures, to share victories and triumphs and challenges, because it is very challenging to create school gardens and to get support from the school. And just a real quick shout out to New Futures. New Futures is a school I'm working with. New Futures is a school dedicated to young pregnant women and young recent mothers and fathers. And Jinx, the principal, approached me and wanted to create a school garden initiative with her whole staff. So it really came from the principal all the way down. She decided to take the whole staff down for professional development day to our farm to learn more about it so they can get excited for the garden. The teachers loved it so much, they decided to bring the entire school out to our farm. Mm-hmm. We had over 150 youth and teachers and community. It was the first time we had 2 week through three-year-olds at the farm. We had to create a mother nursing station. So we had mothers nursing at the farm. We had to create a dirty diaper changing station. And for us, that was just so, it was like one of our most proud farm to school moments, because it really was the whole school involved. And now they came back after that trip. The kids were so excited. They went out and built 8 raised beds that same day they got back from the farm, because they were so excited. And now they have a thriving school and community garden. And so we really need these kinds of things happening. We need support for it. We need resources. And this should be a job. This should be a job for people. And these food corps members, it's only temporary. They can only do 2 terms. So then what happens next? You know, how can we support this work and make it a career for people to work with farms and schools, with health, education, agriculture, all the things that it connects to, all the curriculum?
Well, let's come back to that question of support. It sounds like we could have had a whole show just on school farming, huh? Mm-hmm. But we do have some calls to get to. I want to take Don Peters. He's on the phone with us from Taos. Hello, Don. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for having this wonderful show about farming.
Thanks. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm the executive director for Not Forgotten Outreach here in Taos, and we have a veterans farming project. The project provides veterans and Gold Star families, survivors of fallen heroes, with horticulture therapy, business, agricultural education, helping them become successful farmers. We believe that by creating an open and relaxed environment and working together to overcome physical and mental barriers, returning veterans and Gold Star families can reintegrate gracefully and productively into America's rural communities.
Well, thanks for that, Don. Farming a therapeutic approach to veterans coming back as well. I'm glad to hear about that. Let's go to a call from Greg Ortiz. He's on the phone with us from Acoma Pueblo. Hello, Greg. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning, and thank you so much for bringing this topic to your listening audience and to all the listening audience and the presenters that have made comments thus far. All bring very valuable information that I hope the listening audience that accepts and utilizes. So thank you for that. I'm one of the few people in my generation, I'm 60 years old, by the way, and that still remembers and knows how to farm using horses. And at the Pueblo, where I come from, everybody farmed. We're an agrarian society, but I've also seen that transition away from the agrarian society into, I guess, what I'll call mainstream capitalism. Mm-hmm. And yeah. With that transition, then many of the farms that are on my particular reservation are left idle. And I feel bad for that, because it's very hard now to find the kind of funding necessary to basically restart a farm. We're talking about tractors and kind of the large, the labor-intensive processes that need to occur in order to clear land and prepare it for planting are just sometimes overwhelming. And quite frankly, right now, as you well know, and throughout the country, most households, most families require dual incomes in order to just say it sustain any kind of economic survival nowadays.
Greg, do the crops that you grow out there feed? What do you do with the crops once you grow them? Do they just feed the community? Do you sell them at market?
No, I've held various positions of leadership within the Pueblo, and but I grew up there on the reservation and farming from my earliest memories as a young child. Farming in our family home. We were subsistence farmers, our family, and we still have our lands. And but you know, again, it's now we've gone into mainstream society. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I liked what I heard, I believe, Magdalena say about colonization. In my particular family, as well as most other Native American families, there was a program by the United States government to assimilate Native American people into mainstream American society by removing our people from the reservation to major metropolitan cities and basically sink or swim. My family was one of those, and we came back home. So there's this disconnect and this disruption that sometimes has occurred in some of the families and some of the Native American communities throughout the United States. But getting back to the point, I think, quite frankly, now access to funding to start farming projects, whether it's an individual or a collective that that is seeking funds to get the implements they need in order to farm, I think is necessary, and I think that's critical in any community, whether it's urban or rural.
Well,
and again, thank you so much for the time and for allowing me to comment.
Yes, thank you, Greg. And if
thanks,
you want.
Greg.
Thank you.
The number is 277-5866 to join the conversation. Our toll-free number is 877-899-5866. If you've got a story about farming, questions about how to access this food that we're talking about, issues with school gardens, community gardens, social justice, we want to hear from you. So give us a call. Again, 277-5866. Hi, Magdalena.
I think what's really important that Greg was also talking about is inside expertise. We have it. We have it within our communities. We don't need outside experts. It's wonderful to share resources and bring it, but the sustainability is that inside expertise that's going to keep us going. I come from a family of farm workers. Soy campesina. I've worked the land. You know, we used to migrate as soon as school was out and follow the crop. That's what we did. You know, I picked me, even though my husband sometimes didn't believe me, but we picked all the crops. And never to this, up until this day, do I forget what it takes to bring food to the table when I'm eating food. Mm. When you see the onslaught of injustices, when you're working out in the fields, when you see people who have to walk row after row, don't have bathrooms, don't have water, it is a whole lens of justice, but also injustices that are, it's a huge, you know, struggle. And when we look at the 90s and look at the environmental civil rights movement that happened, I think we're really seeing food now and a strong movement through communities of color as saying food is justice. Food is who we are. Our bodies are the food that we take in. And we can't just be medicated. Medications are important, but we really have a source to heal ourselves. And it comes through our land, it comes through our history, and it comes to the type of food that we grow and teach our children.
Well, let's go to a call from Alma Makitiko, who's on the phone with us from Chaparral. Alma, you work with a group of women farmers, and, you know, usually when we think of campaigns against discrimination or injustice, we think of, say, like sit-ins during the civil rights days or big protests against policies. But what I understand your project is saying, is much like Magdalena was saying, is that you can do the same kind of protest, the same kind of struggle, just by farming.
Yes. Good morning.
Yes,
we work here in southern New Mexico with many low-income communities, no, who have been displaced by various economic policies or some policies, actually border policies. Our community, you know, there has been a strong emphasis on protecting the border, on militarizing the border, which leaves sometimes very few economic opportunities for the people who actually live here. We have suffered for many years from scarce access to fresh food, scarce access to land, like weak land rights. A lot of communities. Our communities who have been displaced, for example, from Mexico, you know, due to the drug war, or we have low-income communities who have been residing here historically, but that also have very poor opportunities to attain land. And I always say that their only land tenure they have is being $300 or $500 that they pay every month for rent, you know, for a room. And if you don't have those $500, then you lose all land rights that you could possibly have. So in a few years ago, the American Friends Service Committee and the Anthony Water and Sanitation District created a partnership to revitalize agriculture and create opportunities for economic development for communities here in southern New Mexico. And with that, you know, we were trying to revitalize not only agriculture, but to revitalize our local food system. Our food system really depended on big chain stores, you know, bringing food from not only outside of the state, but also outside of the country. And so we created these farm training programs, and 4 years ago we have trained about, I don't know, probably more than 20 new farmers. We're currently training five young farmers in Anthony. And then we also have a network of about 13 to 20 small-scale farms in Chaparral, New Mexico.
Sorry, you're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show live from the University of New Mexico. We're talking about community farms and how some are using farming as a way to fight social inequality and poverty. We want to hear from you. What's your experience with food inequality? Have you been able to get locally grown food for you or your family? Do you think that it's made a difference? Give us a call now. The number is 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866 locally in Albuquerque. Toll free 877-899-5866. Send us an email to callinshow@KUNM.org or tweet at KUNM News. You can use the hashtag HealthNM. We'll be right back after a short break.
Hank the truck had served so well, hauled everything, helped friends to move, went on adventures in the mountains. Basically, Hank had become a longtime friend. But when at last Hank couldn't run anymore, his owner decided in one last magnanimous gesture to make Hank's end have meaning. She donated Hank where his essence lives on in another friend, KUNM. You too can help two friends. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Isabel Allende is a consummate storyteller and author of many novels. Next time on New Dimensions, she talks with Michael Toms about writing and the deeply moving story of her daughter's death.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams, reporter for Public Health New Mexico, a KUNM reporting project providing in-depth, investigative, and continuous coverage of public health and the impacts of poverty in our state. Where do you see New Mexico going with the community farming movement in the future? Can this be a part of the solution to our problems with health and poverty? Number is 277-5866 in Albuquerque, 877-899-5866, toll free. You can also send us an email, callinshow@kunm.org. Post comments to our Facebook page. We want to hear from you. And we do have quite a few calls to get to. So let's go to Andres, who's calling from Taos. Andres, thanks for giving us a call. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have a couple of comments on this better way of eating and farming and so forth. I think, you know, as far as even personal gardens, mm-hmm. and let's say you have a knack or a green thumb for tomatoes, and, well, you can specialize on that. Your neighbor will, you know, has a knack for carrots or whatever, and then you all share to the farmer's markets, yeah. and there's only so much tomatoes you can eat, so many carrots he can eat, whatever, and you all share, and it's like more of a way of life what it used to be, instead of relying on these big farms, because then you got to, and then I comment the guy on the subsidies for tractors and so forth, but some people don't even have that amount of land to but it doesn't take a lot of space to grow, concentrate on whatever it is that you want to do, whether it's local chili, whatever, and then support the local farmers market. I think that's the way to feeding our children and ourselves and canning and jarring for winter months. So that's my comment there. And then the herbs, the natural herbs that the earth gives us, the different chamizos, the escoba de la víbora, la chimajá, and all them, you know, we need to gather those when they're there and then use them as also remedies, you know, osha, all the remedies that have been given to us through our ancestors.
Yeah, I think when we talk about community farming, a lot of times we forget that there are all these remedios that go along with it, right? We're thinking about things like kale and chard and carrots. But how are those used, you guys, when you're farming? I mean, Andres, you're near Taos. Do you guys use those herbal remedies that you grow to solve health problems there, to treat headaches or other illnesses?
Oh, yeah. You know, most of them are on my land. You know, most of those have been naturally put here by God, you know, and he made the earth, you know. And we just, you know, the knowledge of what they are and what they're used for is by our ancestors. Because I'm half Native and half Spanish, and, you know, that knowledge is passed on what's used for what. And I use it for everything from stomach aches to headaches to, you know, even for spiritual purposes, you know. So we need to get more of that out and share that and be able to utilize it for our well-being.
Andres, and I totally agree. What you're talking about, we see it a lot in northern New Mexico, is that old way of how we traded food, we bartered food. We didn't necessarily have this commodity food system or, you know, food for profit. And it was these small-scale family farms. And when you were talking about people growing what they like to grow and sharing that, those are those traditional ways that we definitely want to stress that was a sustainable food system, and we had that in New Mexico. We don't have to talk about, like, necessarily all new things. We can look back at the wisdom of our ancestors and the wisdom of how people knew how to grow in a desert and grow in New Mexico. And I think that there are programs out there to help link folks that have the kind of knowledge you have and older farmers to pass that down to the next generation. And we really love doing that at American Friends Service Committee. And I know there's other groups that really work on that as well.
Well, I know that we have a caller that has a question along those lines. Thanks, Syra. Let's go to Ray in Albuquerque. He's calling with questions about how to help on a farm. Hi, Ray.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Thanks for your call.
Well, my name is Ray. A lot of my friends call me Metaphor. I'm a poet. I'm a traveler. I'm from Puerto Rico. We have this issue. We've been having this issue for a long time. Our agriculture was obliterated by the industrialization. So as I travel, I look for places that I can help. And I know there's a lot of people that are doing a lot of programs now by listening to the show. And I know there's a lot of people that want to get help, but can you guys please, everybody that calls and have a program or everybody that calls and need help, give information also, people like me that are really willing to help. And we can really, really looking for people to help with this and learn from them too. Can we get information about it, phone numbers, addresses, name of the programs that we can actually reach out to so we can help? Well, there's a lot of us out there, and I'm sure we're here for a reason to help out and learn and cultivate this, and wherever we go, nurture that too.
Well, we will put some links up on our website, but Travis, Magdalena, do you have any ideas about one place that someone like Ray can go to find more information?
Yeah, you could email me at growthefuture@yahoo.com, and my number is 505-331-6390. Thank you for that, Ray. Call to action. Anybody who wants to come farm, learn about growing food, please contact us. And just real quick about the remedios and the cultural knowledge and the passing that on, the New Mexico Acequia Association has a group called Sembrando Semillas. And it is just that. We just had our spring cambalache. We met an alcalde up north of Española. And it was a gathering of mixed generations from elders to young youth. There was babies. And it was all about sharing that cultural knowledge, sharing the remedios. We worked with Alamo to make some pain relief. We made foods. We worked with quelites. We cooked some quelites. And just passing on that traditional knowledge is so important. So thank you, Andres from Taos, for that, because I feel like that is one of the most important issues right now in this, is that we create spaces where the elders can share that knowledge with our young people and that we can continue on the culture and traditions. And Sembrando Semillas is in Mora, in Chamizal, in Abiquiú, Española. We're here in Atrisco. I mean, those kinds of programs are so important because the elders have such great knowledge to share, and we need need to create spaces and programs and support these spaces and programs for that cultural knowledge to be passed on and to be utilized. So we're gathering medicine seasonally. We're working with the abundance of Mother Earth because she does provide us everything we need to heal ourselves. And we start thinking of food as medicine.
And food that is an medicine. Excellent organization. Travis talking about the Esequia Association. And that website is lasesequias.org. So if you're looking to learn more about the great work that Travis is talking about with the Esequia Association, it's lasesequias.org.
Well, on the Esequia note, we do have an email comment from Megan. She wants to remind folks about water management policies as populations grow. She says, some strategies involve taking water rights from agricultural lands, drying them out in order to serve cities and towns. Now, there's a lot of issues about sustainability of water. I'm wondering, Pam, from the New Mexico Food and Agriculture Policy Council. I know that you've been working on some policy issues. Is this one of the places where you see a big challenge in terms of the sustainability of farms, keeping the water flowing?
Right, absolutely. And a couple of things. So, yes, and currently the State Industry Stream Commission is working on a statewide water plan. There are 16 regions that have been working on local water plans into the future. And it's something that's really important for people to be actively involved in because some of those plans really address the idea of diverting our farm, the water that is attached to our agriculture and to our farmlands to other uses. And, of course, as our urban areas grow, that kind of there's an intensity there. You know, there's pressures to try and figure out those transitions. And so it is really important for us to get active, be active. And sometimes the best way to do that is at the local level. Here in Santa Fe, our Santa Fe County just passed a sustainable growth management plan. And the last time we did that was 30 years ago. So I think about, gee, this is our 30-year plan into the future. And so we made sure to identify food security, preserving local farm and ranch lands and how to do that in various ways. And to also, as everybody's been talking about, think about where we are when it comes to agriculture now and farming and ranching. It is different. A lot of land has been passed down, passed on to others. We have had some of our younger generation move away from the idea of farming and ranching. So there's some real innovative programs like have been mentioned here on the phone or on the radio show, as well as programs called LandLink, LandLink New Mexico. It's one that's been around for a few years, but there's a real growth in it, which is linking people who want to farm of any age and any background, but who want to farm and don't necessarily have land. It's very difficult to come into farming because it can be expensive to purchase land and tools and things like that, as we've been discussing. And so this particular program is about linking people to people who have farm and ranch land and yet may not be farming and ranching anymore or may not be able to or may not have a family member to pass it on to. And so these are the kinds of innovations that we need to really be working towards. And there's some great organizations across the state like the National Young Farmers Coalition and others who really want to link in to the future of farming and make sure that we preserve this as part of our community. And we have a huge reason to want to do that right now. 98% of what we grow in New Mexico and agriculture, as in whether it be traditional or industrial agriculture in New Mexico, 98% of that leaves New Mexico, and it is the fourth largest part of our economy in the state.
So 98% of what we grow goes out, and I think I read that like 80% or more of what we eat comes in, which is a really, really bizarre paradox when you think about it, which I would like to spend more time talking about, but I want to get to some calls before we are out of time for the program. So let's go to Beth in Albuquerque. Hi, Beth. Thanks for calling. Looks like we lost Beth. Go to the next call, Anita in Albuquerque. Hi, Anita. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm calling to the program that we have at the health clinic called Socialism in the South Valley. It's a five-part series.
Say that again, Anita. We didn't. You lost your connection a little bit there.
Oh, okay. I was just saying that I was calling to talk about a program that we have going on right now at Casa de Salud. It's a health clinic. It's a nonprofit health clinic in the South Valley. And we've been doing a few workshops on growing your own medicine cabinet. Mm-hmm. So Maestra Silvia Ledesma from Calpulli has been leading them and teaching us how to basically raise your own medicines and food as medicine in your backyard. We'll be building raised bed gardens. We'll be testing our soils and teaching the members of the community how to do that. And I just wanted to invite everyone to come. There's no cost. It's a donation only. And we'll be doing some of the things that you talked about. And these beds will stay outside of our clinic for our community to use. So I think it's really important to also include that aspect of health.
Thanks, Anita. Magdalena, I see you nodding your head.
No question in terms of, the other thing is there's so many organizations, so many things going on, excuse me, in the South Valley that it's so hard to say one thing and we leave like 10, 15 others right. out. You know, it's like I'm here thinking all of the faces that should be sitting around this table right now. But, you know, with SWAP, with AFSC, Los Jardines, La Placita, you know, Sanchez Farms, Fidel, all these independent little growers who do the collaborative and work together. But I'm going to bring it back to, I wanted to say one other thing to Ray. You asked for a number. I'm going to give you the name of Lauro Silva for the Mountain View Community Garden. His cell is 720-4539, and he will connect you to everything in terms of names, numbers, anything, depending where you're at. But what I wanted to say as we're running out of time is the importance of the food movement, if you will, growing food in Nuevo Mexico. It's so intersectorial. We can't do without each other. We can't do without when Mountain View started its garden. We tapped into everyone that I've named. Can you provide us with this? Who should we go to for that? So there is that real text of knowledge, if you will, within the experts, within the community. Mm-hmm. That's really important. So it's real intersectorial in terms of the food, the obesity, the public health problems with our community, and those are essential to address. And then really important when we're talking about the food movement is the cultural alignment. You don't just go and throw food at community and say, here, this is what you grow. You really have to look and study the history of these communities and culturally align the food because, again, that goes to the whole decolonizing the diet.
Yeah, que viva. Thank you so much. We're running out of time.
I just
wanted to
really
shout
quickly,
out
let's wrap
Project
up.
Feed the Hoods having their opening day at their community garden on the corner of Ross and Wellesley this Saturday, May 7th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We also do a pharmacy with an F at the Southwest Mesa Clinic, 301 Unser Boulevard, 10 to 2 p.m. on Wednesdays. And the farmer's market today in Knob Hill. Come see us 3 to 6:30. Support your local farmer's markets. If everybody eating salad out there bought it locally, our farmers would be really happy.
Right,
so
well.
Thank you, guys.
Mountain View, come sign up for your row and your garden box.
All right, let's leave it there, guys.
Que viva.
We want to thank our guests. Jarvis McKenzie of Grow the Future, Feed the Hood, Magdalena Avila of Mountain View Community Garden, Pam Roy on the phone with New Mexico Food and Agriculture Policy Council. We also had Saira Namaste of the American Friends Co. Committee and Alma Matekin from Chaparral. If you missed part of this program or you want to hear it again, you can find it and past episodes on our website, KUNM.org. We're also podcasting the show on iTunes. Jefferson White engineers the show. Marisa DeMarco managed our phones today. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the Conalma Health Foundation, and the McCune Charitable Foundation. Find out more online at publichealthnm.org. And next week, we'll take a look at new plans for managing water, grazing, and recreational activities on the Carson National Forest. How will the plan balance environmental protection and the needs of residents near forest lands to earn a living? That's next Thursday morning on the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Ed Williams. Thanks for listening.